embarrassing like Facebook memory the other day, and I was like,
oh, is it one of those like, you know, is so excited to.
It was, yeah, like, I'm going to go hang out with some peeps later or something. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
I screenshotted one the other day, and it was like, it's probably a Kid Cudi fucking lyric.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
And I stand by it, but not publicly. You know, like, I like those songs, but.
My Facebook memory today was that Bucktooth picture of me from second grade where, like, my teeth are going in many different directions. So I put it on Instagram just to remind people.
Hello, everyone.
What's up, squad?
Hi, guys.
Happy Tuesday, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully. I was telling Brittany that actually, I think I'm allowed to say this. Yeah, I can say it because I don't know anything about the case. I have jury duty on Monday because it's Friday right now that we're recording. So I have jury duty on Monday. So it might get in the way of our editing schedule. So I might have to release this later. So, I mean, hello from the past, regardless.
I know, I was about to say, and if that's the case, you're finding out right now.
This is a great episode, and it's actually the one that got me into SVU. And by into, I mean when I was a child, because how else do you get into adult programs if not for, like, one episode that makes you go, oh my god, what? And this was that for me.
It is one of the best episodes we've seen so far, and it's probably going to be my best episode of season two.
It's just, like, professionally done, and I know that sounds weird because the show is a professionally done show. It was just so eerie, and it was almost like it was kind of like TV movie quality. I think
I prefer episodes where they're just kind of like consistently working towards the solution of the case. That's why I didn't really care for last episode, where it's like a lot of like, oh, what's this conspiracy, and let's go argue over down here, and I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. Well, it's like, because sometimes those are nice, because you don't really have to like think about it too much. Like, this one involves a timeline, so note-taking wise, like, I went back and, you know, to a T recorded it, like, wrote down everything they were saying just to make sure like I had it. So yes, this is Law and Order SVU season 2 episode 15 Countdown, and it originally aired February 23rd 2001. This is another episode where it's happening like a week after the one that happened. I won't say last week, because last week we did a recap of another show, but like in the sphere of this world, it happened last week. I'm like, God, they're getting pounded.
They're having the worst month.
The worst February ever. Like February 2001. Oh, and we were able to confirm that now we're in the year 2001. So this has been February 2001 for about 4 years.
Professionally, not a great time for them.
I stumbled upon this when I was like 12. And it just, I never like really, I don't know, I knew that like child predators existed, but I guess I just didn't understand exactly what they did. And that's what got me into the show. I was like, holy shit, do they like have to deal with this show? Do they have to deal with this type of stuff all the time, these people? And yeah, they do, actually. Week by week, we're finding. So, opening scene. Husband and wife are sitting in traffic caused by construction. They're bickering because they're late. And he's like, well, if you hadn't taken so long to get ready, we could have left early. And she's like, why do you want to get there so soon? One of your girlfriends there? And he replies pretty genuinely, God, I hope so.
I have to say, I prefer a domestic cold open more than I do a blue collar cold open. I find those so annoying.
So the traffic starts to move. It kind of jolts forward and then stops. So there's this van in front of them. And the fan jolts forward, then stops really suddenly. And as it does that, the back door flies open and this like large thing essentially plummets to the floor. The wife is like, did something fall out of there? And the husband's just like giving the 1,000-yard stare. But he's like angry. Looks like like a murderous rage. And he's like, I didn't see. Well, tell the guy that something fell out. Tell him his doors are open. So the husband rolls down the window and he's like, hey, and the van drives off like immediately, just like fucking peels out of there. So for some reason, then this woman's chaotic. Her mind changes from second to second. She's like, all right, he's gone. Just go. And the husband's like, well, did something fall out or not? She goes, I don't care. Just go. So no wonder he has a girlfriend. I'll be honest with you.
Seriously, she's kind of a shrew.
Just as he's about to drive ahead, this hand reaches up from in front of the car, like reaches up like a horror movie. It's a little hand, and it just slaps the front of the car. And then you see the workmen from the back of the like the background, and they start running towards the car. Cut to the hospital. Benson and Stabler are speaking with the detective who has been investigating this victim's abduction, because obviously I wasn't clear. It was a windowless white van, so obviously this was an abduction. The victim's name is Sophie Douglas, and she's 8 years old. She had been bound and chained up in the van, but she managed to wiggle her hand out of her bindings, and she opened the door to escape. Sophie was abducted after her attacker lured her into the white van 4 days prior. The other detective said that Sophie's mother firmly believed that Sophie's estranged father had abducted her, so they were investigating him as a lead rather than looking into other suspects. So I don't know why, but Benson gives him, like, dry flack for this. She's like, oh, I see, so that was it then? And he's like, oh, I see, you think we fucked up. And then Stabler's like, no. And then they go interview Sophie.
Yeah, that almost seems, they're acting like that's going to be a big part of the episode, that the other detective really fucked it up. They never mention it again.
No, I guess it's like meant to be because they were on a timeline, but we don't know that yet.
Yeah. They're not on one yet.
Just really selling the bull. I don't know if that's what I meant. Anyway, so we walk into the room and Sophie's in the middle of her rape kit examination. So they really went hard on this scene. Wish they hadn't. They put her in like a child's bed, like a little kid's bed. It was like a 4-year-old's bed. I was like, oh, we get it. It's very unsettling. So Benson introduces herself to Sophie and begins to try to put her more at ease. She gives her bubbles to play with and says she was like, I need someone to help me fill this room up with bubbles. The doctor gives Stabler details on the injuries Sophie suffered to her genitals. And so then Stabler confirms for us that Sophie was raped. So then we got to Olivia and she's looking at Stabler, obviously disturbed, upset. And there's just bubbles shooting up from the bed beneath her. And we don't see Sophie blowing the bubbles, so it's just kind of weird. It's like these bubbles are just kind of hitting Olivia in the face.
And Stabler's, like, eyes are drawn close together, so I'm like, oh, God, here we go.
I know.
She was pretty. I'm like, yes, Stabler. Yeah, we're all mad.
I know. Okay,
why does
I'm glad.
Anger feel so performative? Whenever Stabler gets angry, I'm just like, yeah, I get it, Stabler. I fucking hate child rape, too.
No, I agree. I wasn't even going to say it. I think you probably detected in my tone. I was like, I don't know why this bothered me. It just did. I was like, same shit. I'm like, yes, Stabler. Like, God, why would...
Ever since you pointed out that his nostrils flare when he's like about to do the I'm a father bit, I'm always like, here we go.
Which, guys, you'll never guess. Because, you know, this is an 8-year-old, so we have to hear about the kids.
Fucking, once I saw Jeffrey Scaparotta's name pop up, I was like, great. Dickie's gonna be here. Whatever. I forget his first name, but Scaparotta's like his last name.
Yes.
We're like, great. Great, it's the fucking kids.
My God.
Cool.
I didn't really describe, I should have said that Benson. So Benson was introducing herself to Sophie. Obviously, we see Sophie at that point. So I didn't really describe her, but we see Sophie. She's a little girl. She's Andrea Bowen. So if anyone here is a fan of Desperate Housewives, she played Julie Mayer, or I think it's Mayer, who is, I think, Terry Hatcher's daughter in the show.
Yes, she is.
I had thought she was in more things because her face, her adult face, was very familiar to me. And then I was like, okay, well, I've never seen Desperate Housewives, so it's not that. But she's been in, like, nothing else that I recognize. You know what I mean? So I'm like,
I think she just took her bag from Desperate Housewives and fucked off. And respect to her.
And she's a little older than they're making her in this. Like, she was born in 1990. So, but it is a little weird because, like, I think they had her change her voice a little bit. It's kind of like Minnie Mouse a little bit. And I don't know if it's real. So I remember thinking that as a kid, too. I was like, I don't know if her voice is real. So we're in the bullpen. Benson and Stabler are recounting to Cragen, Munch, and Finn that the details that we got from earlier. So the witnesses didn't get the make or the model of the or the plate of the white van. In their defense, I don't know how, like, people don't really, like, go around memorizing stuff like that. Like, wouldn't it be a little weird if people just, like, if they just had it handy?
The detectives are so butthurt this episode about the details everyone misses. And, like, they're like, they couldn't even remember a single number or letter from the license plate. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I've been driving all week and I've been behind tons of cars. I couldn't tell you a single thing about any of the license plates. What are you talking about?
Exactly. And later on, it comes up too, like, Munch is mad. He's like, ugh, did the guy at least pay in cash or on a card? It's like, sorry. He's a criminal, so.
He didn't. And no one knows he's a criminal until they already left. So they weren't like, oh, this guy's acting weird.
Right.
They're like having to remember. I don't know why.
That's a very good point.
so personally.
It's a good point because you're right. They're like, Benson says in the scene, yeah, 20 minutes behind the van and they didn't get any information on it. And it's like, yeah, but if they had, like, isn't that a little Karen-y or weird? It's like, I thought this car looked suspicious, so I took all the information down and called you guys.
I mean, what they're really upset about is that it made their job harder, but it's like, yes. Their job isn't to make your job easier.
Exactly. Like, no, you're right. And then they are doing it a lot in this episode. So, it's like, what? So, Kragen sends Funch out to check on the white vans of the city and tells BNS to go get Sophie Douglas in for questioning. So, they inform him that Sophie's mother is reluctant to do this because she doesn't want Sophie to suffer any further trauma. And he's like, well, tell her no disrespect, but we have to find this guy.
He's kind of like tough.
Yeah, he's like, do it anyway. That's what I have in my notes, but I was like, I should probably, like, you know, put in a little more effort. I'm like, this is my favorite episode. He's like, do it anyway. Dun-dun. Now we're going to start getting dates, and I'm going to follow the dates because of Dun-dun, the countdown. So it's February 19th, Child Advocate Center. Cabot shows up, and she's like, wait, why is everyone still here? I thought this would be over by now. And I'm not really sure why. Again,
I'm like, how late are you?
So Stabler tells them that they're having a hard time separating Sophie's mom from her. She, like, wants to be in the room, I think, during the questioning, but she's also, you'll come to find, acting a little, okay, understandably, but she's being a little bit annoying.
Oh, I found her wicked annoying. I feel okay, so bad. Good. Like, obviously in real life I wouldn't, but, like, here, she's just like, hasn't she been through enough? And I'm like, shut the fuck up and let them talk to your kid.
Thank you. Okay, I'm glad we're aligned on this. Because, you know, you hate to be the one who's, like, mad at a character because then, and the other person's like, I thought it was okay. And you're like, oh, God, so am I just, like, crazy?
I'm going to do what I want to do when I feel bad about disliking something. And I'm going to blame it on the acting. I'm like, she just didn't act it right.
So Cabot's like, okay, fine. Sophie's mom, because I call her Sophie's mom because she has an estranged husband. So I'm like, I don't want to call this lady Miss Douglas.
That maybe that's not her name no more.
Yeah, she's not married to that man. He could have kidnapped the daughter even though he didn't, but he could have. And that's the problem. Sophie's mom, a.k.a. Mrs. Douglas, she's allowed to watch Olivia's session with Sophie from the viewing room where Cabot and Stabler and some random lady operating the camera will be. So cut to that interview room. Karen last week told us that Benson's basically the victim whisperer. Like, that's how good she is that she's going to go talk to this kid, even though Stabler is a father.
Is a father.
They don't want to send Stabler in because they're like, Stabler, you can't bore the victim with stories about Maureen, okay?
Why is that victim crying, Stabler? Oh, I was trying to tell her about my daughter, Elizabeth, and she got so bored, she just started bawling.
She thinks it's sad that I don't know her name.
Stupid kid.
And here we were, afraid we wouldn't be able to make this funny.
I just found everyone really irritating this episode, yes! Even though I really liked the episode.
No, I even found, I'm going to cut this out because I'm not going to be the person who hates all the children, but I even found Sophie a little irritating.
Oh, I was about to say, so the way Sophie plays it, she's just like, then I had a party, but it wasn't really a party because there weren't other people there.
Oh, like, duh.
I'm like, shut the fuck up. I don't care.
Cut to the... Yeah, okay, wait, I already did that. So Benson asked Sophie what her attacker looked like. He's white. She couldn't remember... Nobody in this episode can remember what his hair or eyes look like.
And I mean, I've seen him, like, once, and I could tell you the color of his hair.
It's like a running bit. She could not remember his hair or eyes, but she did say he had really scary teeth.
Like a monster's.
They're making this 10-year-old whose voice is clearly changing talk a little younger. Benson asks Sophie how she met the man, and she becomes emotional and shamefully says, I'm supposed to go right home, but I saw a puppy. Benson asks, did the man have this puppy? Sophie says, no, I didn't want to get in the van. And Benson's like, it's okay, Sophie, we know, it's all right. So Sophie says, she gets upset, basically. She kind of, like, repeats a few different, like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done this. And then she says that she doesn't want to talk anymore. So we cut to the viewing room, and Mrs. Douglas is getting upset. She's like, we have to stop this. It's too much. She doesn't know anything else. We need to wait until she feels better another day.
And I'm like, she does know more shit, Mrs. Douglas. Shut up.
Leave her alone.
I don't know why, but the more we're talking, the more I am filled with rage for Mrs. Douglas. the real villain of this episode.
I don't mean to create a bit of a witch trial around her, but I hated this bitch. Oh my God.
Okay, we are on the same page.
Oh my God. And it made me kind of hate her daughter a little.
I sometimes think, and I'm trying to give us an excuse, I guess. I think when an actor is older than their part, like Virginia Hayes, and they're acting younger, it gives you the ick really hard.
Because I think there's got to be some morality where when it comes to dealing with sex stuff, they do have to age the victim up a little.
I mean, Michael.
Oh, mwah. Every time I remember Michael, it makes me so happy.
He's just a boy. And we're like, is he?
And then also chat room, never forget. Remember like Elaine or Elise, who was supposed to be 14.
And she looks like me in a school girl. A schoolgirl skirt. Sorry, wow, that took a lot to pull out of me. I'm like, okay.
That was another one where she was like, because I looked it up and she was like 23 or something. And they had her talking like this. My grandma said it would be okay.
Ew. Talk like an adult.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Hit you.
Also, I think Julie on Desperate Housewives is famously wicked fucking annoying. So it's okay if we don't like this.
Brittany's like, victim. I didn't want to say this at the beginning. This is your Ashley Austin part?
She kind of is.
And you know what's kind of the sickest part about this is that Mrs. Douglas is more of a mother than Ricky ever would be. And here I sit hating her. And I actually didn't hate Ricky. I defended Ricky.
You're like, I wish Mrs. Douglas would leave Sophie alone.
I'm like, is Ricky supposed to just not be talented? Because her daughter can't get the fuck over herself.
Well, my, how the turntables.
Oh my God. I might have to restart that.
Oh, Jesus.
Wait. Okay, no.
I don't know if I can do it again.
I'll just say the last line. No, it's true. Oh my God. Cabot's getting annoyed, but she hasn't said anything yet. She's like, I think she's just kind of in the corner with her arms crossed. But Stabler's like, I assure you, this is where he goes, I assure you, Detective Benson is a pro. Like, she'll be able to do this. And Mrs. Douglas is like, no. And so Stabler goes, Olivia, we're going to try to speed it up a little. Please, let's get the location. And she's got an earpiece, which is kind of funny. Sophie says that her days in captivity, they were named, or labeled, I guess, titled, I should say, by Sophie's attacker. The first day was called the party day. And that sounds like it was right when he got her to this location. He had decorated a living room with balloons and streamers, and he fed her cupcakes and punch. The next day was picture day. And this is when he forced her to wear different costumes, and then he would take pictures of her. Olivia asks what kind of costumes, and Sophie notes that there was a princess, a mermaid, and a ballerina. And she kind of gets uncomfortable right here, and she goes, I told him I could dress myself, but he had to help me anyway. So Sophie's becoming, again, visibly distressed because she was like, I said I could dress myself. He wouldn't let me. So the mother is, again, demanding that they stop. So Stabler is playing good cop because father, and he's consoling her. But Cabot's really not having any of this, and her arms are crossed. They are Cabot crossed. And she tells her she cannot interrupt the proceedings, and it will impede their ability to locate Sophie's attacker. So I don't know why the mom doesn't really care about this. Like, I do. It's kind of rhetorical that I'm saying that, but she's still freaking out. She's like, no, she can't do this. It's too much for her. And then she kind of like collapses into Stabler's arms. And he's like, do you want us to get this guy? Do you want us to catch him? And she goes, I want him dead. And Stabler's like, then let us talk to her.
And that's when I had the biggest ick for Mrs. Douglas. I was like, ooh.
Both of them. And Cabot is us, like detectives, Porter and a growler in this corner going.
They haven't appeared for episodes.
They have not. Oh my where God. Have they been, Brittany? Do you know where they've been?
They had a falling out during the Ashley Austin Black case and had to be put on leave.
I think that might have been the last time we saw them. I think you're right.
But they're back.
So Cabot's just, we're having fun over here, but Cabot is genuinely like looking at them like, oh my God. And she says to Olivia in her earpiece, she's like, I basically hurried up. The man called Sophie's third day in captivity her special day. Great, yeah. And he forced her to take a bath. So at this point, Sophie becomes really distressed and she starts to shame spiral. It's my fault. I shouldn't have gotten in the van. So she says specifically, The man said there were more puppies in the van and I just wanted to see them. There was a big box in the back of the van, so I climbed in. And then she trails off and she starts to panic. So right then, her mom busts the door open. And she does, oh, she's so infuriating. She, like, throws it open like she wasn't just acting like a fucking hysterical mess. You're a fucking mess. You're a fucking mess.
Pull it together, oh, Detective Umbrella. You're out of line.
So Sophie goes, Mommy. Now I hate the bulk, you know? I know. Fucking
bad. What's wrong with me? I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Mommy. I know.
I just wanted to punch both of them in the face. I'm like, just fucking tell them what happened.
Guys, we promise. There's a reason why we're so angry. They all try to implore her to stay, but Mrs. Douglas is like, no.
She's like, no.
No more.
She can't take any more. And Cabot's like, literally like, great.
I haven't seen this type of, like, rage in her face since she was interviewing Marnie Stalker.
It's so funny that she has, like, this much avarice towards a stalking rapist and the mother of a child. She is all of us. I love it.
Now we cut to, it's Cabot, Benson, Stabler all discussing, you know, Mrs. Douglas being the fucking worst. So Cabot says that they can legally compel Sophie's mom, Mrs. Douglas, to present Sophie for more questioning. But Benson says they can't pry the info out of Sophie. And since Stabler pipes in, I wouldn't put my girls through it. You don't know. And he looks at them.
Thanks, Elliot.
And the face you just made is the face they were both making. They were literally staring at him like, okay, like, okay. Fucking.
Olivia's the victim whisperer. You shut the fuck up.
Right. So then why aren't you in there talking to her? Oh, like, you don't know. So then you go in there and work your magic. But I guess you're not allowed to anymore. Probably because you just fucking bother people with stories. Yeah. They decide that they're going to re-canvass the witnesses, or four witnesses, I should say, or whatever. I wrote, or what have you, so I guess I wasn't too invested.
You're like, whatever. None of this matters at this point in time.
So angry at the Douglases. So Benson says, wonder if Finn and Munch are having better luck with the van.
So quick rewind.
Oh.
What's the fu- So,
puppy.
Was there, or was there not, a puppy, Sophie?
Puppy. Okay. Oh, sorry, everyone. Someone's vacuuming outside of my...
Rude.
I know. Vacuuming the hallway. What it sounded like originally was he had a puppy, and he was like, you know, old story of the book, standing there like, look at my puppy. And then she walked up to him, and he said, I have more in the van. That's what I thought. But then, upon rewatch, Sophie says, but I saw a puppy. I was supposed to go right home, but I saw a puppy. So Benson asks, did the man have this puppy? And then Sophie goes, no, I didn't want to get in the van. So,
where was the puppy?
Yeah.
Like, did she see a puppy and he was like, oh, do you want to see more puppies?
So, I think that's what it was. I think, or they might have just, like, forgotten they did this or whatever, editing, the clip didn't get cut out. But I think what they meant was, it sounds like she saw a puppy in the area. So, like, maybe someone was walking a puppy or, like, there was a puppy over there and she saw it and was like looking at it, and then he approached her and was like, oh, do you like puppies? I have more puppies in my van, like, you know, or something.
That must be it, because the way they presented it was so fucking dumb. They were just, it was like, I saw a puppy. Did the man have the puppy? No, I didn't want to get in the van. I'm like, how'd we get from point A to point B?
Because then I was like, well, but there was a box in the back of the van, so wouldn't he have known about, how would he know about the puppy? But I guess the puppy, you know, again, oldest trick in the book, but for a reason. I guess the puppy trick can be applied anywhere. And this just happened to be a lucky day when there was a real live puppy in the vicinity.
We do know he's an opportunist, so.
It was a little clunky, but I know what you're thinking, everyone. And there is no puppy. It never gets referenced again.
We wish there was.
Maybe they did that. Maybe they were like, fuck, we already committed to this puppy thing. But now people are going to be like, where's the puppy? Is the puppy in danger? Did he kill the puppy? Like, why would there be a puppy? People are going to be writing in about the puppy. So now we have to just like quickly make her go, no.
No, there was no puppy.
This might have been my first real introductions to the dangers of the windowless white van.
Probably. Like,
yeah.
I can't think of a time it would have come up for us before then.
So dun dun. Now we're at. We're at a nondescript job site. So Funch are on a stakeout. They're in their car and they're eating takeout. They're on a stakeout eating takeout, waiting for one of the suspects. Finn is like heavy into his Chinese at this point. And Munch is reading from the files about this guy that they're waiting for. So his name is Oliver Tunney. He's a former child's party clown. And he was caught and convicted of molesting the children that he came into contact with, that he was clowning for. So Tunney pulls up in his own windowless white van. So Oliver Tunney is none other than famous comedian Jim Gaffigan.
I love Jim Gaffigan.
I almost forgot because it had been a minute since I'd seen this episode. And then I had to remind myself, I'm like, he's not the guy. Sorry, guys, he's not the guy.
Well, you know how there's that joke about how like the biggest name in the credits is always like the rapist?
Yes.
His name is the first that appears in the credits. And I was like, I don't think it's him. Like the first, as I was rewatching this the first time, I'm like, I'm pretty sure. Also, I love Jim Gaffigan. So it'd be very upsetting for me if he was the actual rapist.
He is top billed. Which is so weird because he doesn't have hardly anything to do with this after, like, it's like not even 5 full minutes of him.
No.
And he gets top billing, but then Eric Roberts, who was in the entire episode.
And was a big deal.
Was a main character, yeah, and is a very famous actor in his own right, was uncredited?
So weird. I saw his book at the bookstore.
Eric Roberts' book?
Yeah, it was at the bookstore, but it was on election day, and we just all had a lot going on, so I just didn't feel like texting you about it. So I thought I'd bring it up now.
At a time like this?
At a time like this, really?
If you were, like, deciding to tell me about dating woes, I might be like, at a time like this.
Today.
But yeah, today, Brittany. No, marriage woes I'd be fine with. If it was like, I just, like, I'm afraid I'm gonna die alone. This is not the day.
I'm married, and I could still die alone.
You could die alone.
I don't know why I went that dark.
No, but you're right. You could die alone.
One of us is going to die alone. Who knows?
And you're supposed to be happy about it because you already had love. That's not right. You're still dying alone, Brittany. You're just like me.
Yeah. No, we're all going to die alone. Oh, my God. Sorry, guys. This is...
we're having a lot of fun.
Episode title? We're all going to die alone.
Yes. They approach Jim. I'm just going to call him Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, I know. It's Jim Gaffigan.
They approach Jim Gaffigan. Oliver, I'm not going to call him Oliver Tunney when I know.
He's Jim. He looks like a gem.
So they approach him and he starts going, oh, come on, man. I didn't do nothing. I'm clean. I learned my lesson. The same old rapist, you know, like, oh, come on. So he says that he's a house painter now and he owns his own business. And he has this van for that reason. Finn rips off the decal, it's like a magnetic decal, and reveals that it could be unmarked. So I guess the one detail we had about the actual rapist van is that it is unmarked. So, you know, that much we got from those pesky witnesses. So they notice that there's also white paint on Jim Gaffigan's neck, and he's like, yeah, house paint, because I'm a house painter. Finn goes, it's enough for probable cause, and he rips open the van, and well, they find a green curly wig, clown wig, clown suit. So,
God, I hate clowns.
Cut to the mean interrogation room where they briefly interrogate Jim Gaffigan about his alibi. They're like, come on. He's like, I'm telling you, I was home. And they're like, no, you weren't. And he's like, I was home. You know, so then Benson and Stabler both come in and they're doing the like, you know, like, well, well, well. And they throw a newspaper down. It's a newspaper from like Norwalk, Connecticut. And there's a bunch of children's events circled and it was in his van. So they accuse him. They're like, yeah, found this in your van. He's like, so? And they're like, all the children's events are circled. He's like, yeah. And they're like, okay, well, we have witnesses who saw you at the Norwalk County Fair. And he was like, yeah, so that's where I was. Can I go now? That's my alibi. And they're like, okay, no, but that's the problem because those same witnesses also witnessed you being, well, they didn't say this, but they witnessed him being inappropriate with some of the children there. So it sounds like he was clowning. And being gross. So now the Connecticut authorities want to speak to him. So yay, we caught a pedophile.
We got one person off the streets. Bye.
Right. We really SVU'd that one, guys. But like they can't even in this situation, it must suck to like not even really be able to be happy about catching a pedophile because another one is still out
like
there.
Like a worse one.
So the squad is now discussing their disappointment or the lack of developments. Once again, really mad that no one is doing their job for them. Stabler tells Benson that Mrs. Douglas still wants to give Sophie time to heal before she's questioned again. They all start discussing what they're going to be doing with the rest of the night, which, you know, is kind of a red flag because they're all like, you know, what are you guys doing after we leave here at 5 o'clock
sharp? Well, uh-oh.
Yeah, so the Stabler says he's going to get a birthday present for the twins. Kathy will be shocked that he did it 2 days early. He just made, you know what I've realized? He makes her sound unlikable. Like, he's doing this a lot, too. It's a lot of him making her sound unlikable.
We don't see her very often, so a lot of it's his fault. Some of it is her fault, because we haven't seen her at home, but...
Benson takes out her flip phone, and she makes a cellular call to a gentleman suitor to confirm their date within the next few hours. And Munch is like, how's Mr. Dreamboat, or Mr. Perfect? And she's like, huh, good so far, except for I keep canceling on him. And which makes sense, because as we know, every freaking week there's a new case.
Seriously, like, these people have not stopped working, and she won't take a vacation, so...
And this lady didn't want to stop working when her mother fell down the stairs drunk. Outside of a West Side Market. Which used to be the Velvet Room.
She was drunk.
She was drunk. No. My mother never takes supper.
She was drunk.
She was drunk.
R.I.P.
So the four of them, you know, Munch, Stabler, like Benson, Olivia, they all get in the elevator chit-chatting. They're kind of giggling. They hop in. Just as it's about to take off, Cragen throws his hands in between the doors.
It's almost like he, like, pushes them open and is like, ha!
No one's going anywhere. Another little girl was just abducted by a man in a white van. And they all kind of, they don't really look concerned. They kind of look like,
oh, fuck.
God. So, dun-dun. Convenience store where this took place. The abduction, thank you, Paige. The abduction took place. Outside. I always do that because I forget my next line, so I'll be like, the convenience store where the abduction took place, and then I'll go, the abduction took place outside of this convenience store. A girl named Kirsten Guzik, and she's 8. I'm going to switch between Kirsten, Kristen, and Kirsten probably every single time, as is customary with a name like this. She was taken from the car after her mother quickly ran into the store.
You didn't lock the car door?
Leaving a child unattended in a car. Why are you doing it? Munch is inside the convenience store, and the shop owner's telling him that the suspect purchased beer. He was 6 foot. He was American. He was also drunk. But this guy also doesn't know hair and eye color.
Nope.
So Munch asks if there's anything else about the guy that the shop owner remembered, and the shop owner says, oh, his teeth. His teeth were very unfortunate. Like Austin Powers.
And Munch is like, that's all you picked up on?
Which is, like, consistent. Yeah. Munch is pissed to find out the store cameras don't work. He goes, any of these store cameras work? And the guy's like, no, but, you know, they kind of do the job since they're up there. And Munch is like, ugh, is this my day going to get any better by you telling me that he paid with a credit card? And the guy was like, no, he paid in cash. I remember because it was my last 20 of the night. And then of that change, he requested $2 and quarters for change back. So Munch tells the CSI guys to take the 20s for fingerprints. Yeah, again, he's really mad that, like...
And the guy, again, hadn't committed a crime yet, so there wasn't really much of a reason for this guy to be, like, trying to clock him. And the camera thing, it's like, that would only really hurt that guy in case if someone, like, robbed his store. So it's like, obviously right. He wasn't thinking, like, oh, a pedophile's gonna kidnap someone outside my store. I better have a camera to make sure. And Munch is such, like, a dick about it. He's like, oh...
I suppose you're not going to tell me that he paid with card, are you? It's like,
guy's supposed
no.
to lie and be like, yeah, he paid with a card.
Outside, Finn speaks with a witness, a guy who says he saw the white van take off and he was able to see the license plate had like an H or a B on it. And then he asks, so he's kind of, Finn's like, anything else you remember? He's like, oh, no. And then he goes, do you mind if I go? The cold isn't good for her. And he holds up like a violin case. And I didn't know that.
Me? Well, I knew like cold was not good for like... acoustic wood. Instruments. But also, I love how like a child was abducted and this guy's like, can I go? He's the one witness who I'm like, fuck you.
And they treat him nicely. The witness leaves, violin guy leaves, Munch joins Finn outside, and they go over their theory. The suspect likely was using the payphone when he saw Kirsten and Mrs. Guzik pull up to the store, and then when Mrs. Guzik went inside, he took the opportunity to abduct Kirsten. Munch tells CSI to dust the payphone for prints as well as the quarters inside the box. I wrote LOL.
I mean, Munch even says it's a long shot. He's like, well.
So, dun-dun. Now we're getting a countdown because now we're on.
It's on countdown, a countdown time. Yes.
We're at the Guzik apartment. It's February 19th at 10:42 p.m. This is a very short scene because we're just kind of shaming the Guziks for
putting their child in danger.
Right, because we find that apparently it's a little bit all of their faults here. Mm. So, I mean, not really, but...
Daddy Guzik is like, I just want a pack of smokes.
So that's why they had to stop at that store. And then Mrs. Guzek goes, it was cold. I didn't want to wake Kirsten up. I didn't want to get her out of the car. It was just going to be a second. Oh, the Guzeks. So they give BNS a recent photo of Kirsten Guzek. Guzek. Bullpen. Dun-dun. So Benson questions why the suspect would risk another grab so soon after Sophie. And this is, like, I believe 24 hours? I think it's the next day.
Yeah.
So Finn notes that the guy was drunk, per the shop owner, and he might have spent the day holed up in his apartment drinking and stressing out about Sophie because she got away until he felt confident the cops weren't on to him. Then they think that he, like, went out to go get beer, you know, because he was already drinking. So he went to go get beer, get more drunk, and then he saw the opportunity.
So I would assume he lives in the area near the bodega.
Right. And that doesn't come up.
Which, yeah, I don't think
that's it's a very good point, Brittany. And yet it does not come up.
Good point, Detective Porter. You're wrong.
I guess he was drunk driving throughout the borough looking for, maybe he needed a payphone. Puppy. So Benson gets stressed, realizing that they never received the delivery of open case files in the last 5 years. And Munch is like, it's 1 a.m. Benson knows the case file guy. So she's like, he knows that I don't fuck around here.
Yeah, she was like, he's like my best friend. And he said he'd be here.
He said he would bring them to me any time of the day, even if he didn't technically say that. And I just made it up. Stabler says that the suspect is following the same schedule as Sophie's abduction, party day when the girl gets home. And they have 8 hours for picture day. Cut to 3 a.m.-ish. Finn is looking through the suspects in the system, and he goes, there's a lot of bad mouth mother effers in here. And that is when Cragen goes, I thought you had more details on the appearance. And Finn goes, no. Cut to.
I'm like, why did they include that?
Right. Like, obviously they had more dialogue than what I just said, but that was what it amounted to.
No, that's like what they said, though.
Stabler is becoming a crank monster. We're starting to see, like, their decline because, like, now we're working a lot, yeah. You know? He starts yelling about the stale coffee. Munch is cracking jokes and trolling him, and he goes, I made that coffee 19 hours ago, but still. And then Stabler opens the coffee can so that he can make a fresh pot, and it's empty. And so then he yells at Munch for always putting the empty cans back after using up all the coffee, and Munch goes, it's my process.
He would be me where I start to get loopy and I start getting quippy and people don't like it.
So the files arrive and it's like a massive thing of case files, boxes on a dolly. So Stabler goes into the nap room. I think they call it the barracks to get Olivia. It's where all those like bunk beds are. And she's startled awake and her hair is a fucking mess.
She has like baby chick hair.
And apparently she's only been asleep for like 20 minutes or something. Like not
with
even.
With a case file. She sleeps with her case files.
Oh
guys.
My God.
Fucking typical.
Oh, also she was napping in a turtleneck, which is scary. How do you nap in a turtleneck? I know, like getting strangled.
Yeah.
I would not be able to nap under these conditions, like I said earlier. Anyway, I'm like impressed, but she's like, ugh. But then he tells her the case file's there and she's like, oh,
she's like hot to trot. She's like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, she's like, ugh. She didn't even fix her hair. So now it's February 20th at 8 a.m. She's 12 hours missing, Kirsten is. They're in one of the nice interrogation rooms with all the files. And Munch informs them that it's now 8 a.m. and they've been working for a full 24 hours. Stabler says that the suspect has had Kirsten for 12. So he seems to be overwhelmed realizing how much time has elapsed and he leaves the room. And I was thinking that too. I'm like, that would be like,
because you would know now it's picture day and that would be like,
you would
feel sick about that. You'd be like, oh my God, okay.
Benson follows him and he tells her they need to start pressing Mrs. Douglas again to question Sophie. Dun dun. Well, not really. It's the same day. It's February 20th. We're at the Douglas residence. It's 9:04 a.m. Mrs. Douglas is being awful. And she has this look on her fucking face as she tells them no, they cannot speak with Sophie, even though there's another little girl actively going through the exact same thing.
Just hate her.
I didn't even really take notes on what they were saying because it's just Olivia.
Like, who fucking cares?
It's Olivia and Elliot trying to placate to this godless, soulless fucking woman that there is another 8-year-old currently. They literally say she is currently going through what Sophie went through. And Mrs. Douglas is making this face. You're going to have to get a lawyer then. That's what, because they're like, we're going to have to get a warrant to compel you or whatever they get, to compel you to bring her. And she's like, well, that's just what you're going to have to do. Almost as if she doesn't believe them. Like
she is talking to Olivia Warrant Benson. And I'm like, the fix your face, Mrs. Douglas. Fix your face. You're talking to the warrant queen of Manhattan.
Yeah, kind of bravo to this actress in a lot of ways, because I'm like, what's your name? Because I hate you. So dun dun, now we go to Judge Petrovsky's chambers. It is same day, Feb 20, 1240. So we have Cabot, Mrs. Douglas, Petrovsky, and Mrs. Douglas's lawyer here. Cabot tells Petrovsky that Kirsten has been missing for 18 hours and they could potentially save her before she is raped. Which again, it's like, how do you hear that and not go, okay, let's try it. Mrs. Douglas's attorney argues that Sophie can provide no additional details about her abduction, so it's pointless. Cabot argues that Mrs. Douglas terminated the initial session early, leaving a lot of ground uncovered. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mrs. Douglas says again that Sophie doesn't know anything else and questioning her is cruel. She goes, please, it's just cruel.
Judge Petrovsky's like, shut up.
Yeah, she basically gives like a PC kind of response. She's like, yeah, I understand why and you're not wrong, but I literally cannot make that a reason above the fact that someone's missing. So now it's February 20th at 1:56 p.m. We are in a nice interrogation room. Benson is sitting there with Sophie and making quick small talk before transitioning into questions about the attack. Sophie is nervous at first, but Benson assures her that he won't be discussing any of the bad things that happened. And that's true. They actually don't make her go over the actual rape, which they don't spare us later on in life. Olivia asks Sophie what she ate when she was with the man. She's like, I know we already talked about it, but can you tell me again? What did you eat? So Sophie says the only thing they ever ate was cupcakes, fruit bunch, and corn candy. Because apparently Sophie's from Wisconsin, Minnesota way.
I was like, it's candy corn.
It's candy corn, Sophie. You grew up in Manhattan. They call it candy corn here.
Also, that is like my night. I hate fruit punch and I hate candy corn. I do like cupcakes.
That would be like such a creepy, have some punch and corn candy. And oh God, not. Now they got me saying it's some corn candy.
Corn candy.
Minnesota, corn candy.
Corn candy. Corn candy.
Corn candy.
Whatever. That's it's candy Sophie corn. Says
it. Candy corn. Yeah. This is how Sophie should be saying it. Yo, they gave me some candy corn, fruit punch, and cupcakes. What do you want? She's smoking. Benson's like, anything else? Well, so Benson does say, she goes, huh, well, that sounds fun, but what did you have for dinner? And I don't know why, but there's something very odd about someone referring to food they have in captivity as dinner.
Yeah. What'd you have for dinner? I'm like, Olivia, they didn't sit down for a nice meal.
It wasn't dinner. It's what did he give you in the evening? So Benson asked Sophie if she noticed any signs, labels, names, business names during that time. Just anything at all with a label on it. Sophie says that at his house on party day, there was a banner with her name on it in glitter. She says that he also blew up balloons using a machine and she sucked the air out of him. He sucked the helium out of the balloons to make himself talk funny.
Ew, I'm sorry, Sophie. He sounds horrid.
Cut to Benson and Stabler. They're outside going, I think, to find the party stores. They're discussing the fact that the suspect likely had to get the Sophie streamer from a party store day of, because obviously he wouldn't have known her name. They decide to narrow it down and canvass all the party stores that have helium tanks, that sell helium tanks. Dun dun, Aladdin's party supplies, February 20th, 420. Funcher speaking with the sales girl. This girl was in Swim Fan. I love that movie.
Oh, was she? She was really pretty.
Kia Goodwin, and she is Shari, the Aladdin's party supply girl. So lately, she's been in DC Noir, The Code, Elementary, Show Me Your Hero. She was in two episodes of SVU, so one more recently in 2015, The Good Wife. She kind of slowed down with acting a couple years ago. So she says that the suspect comes into the store about every few weeks, to buy candy corn, mostly. So he also purchased an at-home helium tank and paid in cash, of course, because this guy is what, everybody? A criminal. Stop asking that question. So she also confirms, most importantly, that his teeth are really bad. She's like, I wouldn't buy so much candy if I were him.
I was like, you're right.
So back to the bullpen, done, done. They're all taking calls and reading files. Everyone's cranky and
tired.
They're
getting progressively more pissed at each other.
Olivia and Elliot are taking personal calls while everyone else is working for real. Benson's date, Michael, calls her at work at her fucking work desk, and she apologizes to him for, like, canceling again. And Stabler begs Kathy not to strike him when he gets home.
She's like, it's the twins' birthday.
It's the twins' birthday. Remember the twins? No, I don't. I remember we had a son and two daughters.
Elizabeth's face is literally, like, a blank to me.
Oh, yeah. No, we saw her today.
You know, in The Ring, when they like take a, like the person's face gets fucked up in the picture afterwards.
Yeah.
Or like when they're cursed. That's Elizabeth to me. I can picture Dickie. Nothing for Elizabeth Stabler.
So Stabler has also informed Kathy they've been working for 36 hours straight. I'm sure she was real nice about it, too. Oh, he calls her baby and I'm fucking sick.
Ew.
So Munch says he found three autopsy reports with the stomach contents matched the food Sophie had when the man fed her. Why did I write it like that?
Wow.
The victims were a girl from the Bronx in 1998, a girl from Brooklyn in 99, and a girl from Long Island last year. All three were strangled. They were all killed 3 days after they disappeared, and all three were found in water. One of the girls wasn't found for 2 weeks, and the ME put the time of death at 11 days prior, which was the third day. So basically just confirming that this pattern exists.
Yes.
They note that Sophie escaped on her third day, and it was 6 blocks from the East River, and Kirsten begins her third day in the morning. So it sounds like he takes them to the body of water and then kills them there, which is a little bit risky.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, so like he pulls up by the body of water, strangles them, and then throws them in. That's how you get caught, my dude.
Yeah, it's a little dramatic. That
actually literally is kind of how he gets caught.
Yeah, it is, actually. Like, so, done. We're in the bullpen still. Not sure why I had to done it, but all right. Not sure why I had to make a whole second section for it, but I did. So they're laying out a map of the previous victims. It's a map of the boroughs. So first we had 8-year-old Rhonda Simmons abducted 3 years ago in the Bronx, body dumped in the East River, and washed up in the Navy Yards, 1998. Year and a half later, Sheila Wells, 7, abducted from Greenpoint, found by sewer workers, 1999. Year after that, Kira Bly, 9, from Long Island, found in the Sound, 2000. Kira was abducted 6 months before Sophie, who was grabbed a day before Kirsten. So he is escalating. No DNA was found on any of the victims. They're discussing his travel pattern and why he went from borough to borough and then Long Island. They're also kind of discussing like him, like, is he a pro? Is he this? Is he that? So right then, another cop walks in and tells them that 1PP is pressing them for a press release to the public. Cut to the squad are all in the men's, or maybe it's a unisex bathroom.
Maybe.
But they're all in the bathroom and they're waiting outside of a stall for Cragen to be done. He opens the stall and he sees them all and he goes, I'm not tipping all of you.
Which is so funny because I would have been like, you guys couldn't fucking wait outside.
I know, or like talk to him through the stall. I would have been like, hey, sorry, this can't wait.
And they could have sent just like one person in, like Munch, who I think would be the least afraid.
So basically they discuss if it's smart. None of them really want to do a press release because they don't want the suspect to get panicked.
Spooked, yeah.
Dump the van, maybe kill Kirsten prematurely. It would also open the floodgates for tips and calls. Psychics call and all that. It holds up the investigation. Because then if there's too many calls, they need people answering. They can't put anyone out in the field. So this is actually a good episode for explaining kind of like these types of cases.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they decide to put the press release out, but withhold the information on the van so he doesn't dump it. Another random cop comes over and tells them Rhonda Simmons' mother. So this is the first victim that they know of from the Bronx. Rhonda Simmons, she's at the station and she wants to speak with someone from the squad. Nice interrogation room. They send in Stabler the father. Rhonda's mother apologizes. She says that she knows they're very busy, but she wanted SVU to have Rhonda's last school photo ever taken. And Stabler does explain that they have a photo of her, but the mother is like, I think it's supposed to be kind of an emotional thing. She's like, no, but this is her last ever photo taken. And it came 2 weeks after she was found dead.
Now, at first, I was like, oh, my God, the killer sent her a picture. And then I'm like, oh, no. Like, they'd already been taken and they were sent later. Okay.
She goes, I want it in your pocket when you find him. And I'm like, it was sweet. And I do think they picked kind of a funny actress for this because she was like, I'm sorry, I know you're very busy.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, that actress was not good.
So dun-dun, bullpen. Cragen trips over something at the desk and starts yelling about how this place is a pigsty. And Benson, like, jumps, and she's clearly got, like, drunk mom trauma. She's like, ugh, loud noises. And she goes, you're the one who said no janitors. Oh, thanks, Olivia, so it's my fault. I'm just saying.
Everyone is turning on each other.
Everyone's mad. And you know what? And in Cragen's defense, it is the food's piling up and everything.
I bet they all stink, too.
Oh, I bet it smells too high heaven in there.
Ugh.
Munch enters and announces that they traced the convenience store payphone calls on February 19th. And that the call right before Kirsten's mom called 911 was a call made at 7:53 to a guy named Sal Garner. So Dun-Dun, we go to Sal Garner's home. He's an old man. It's 5 a.m.
He's like a freaking troll.
He is a troll. He's actually, he was so funny and they made him so trolly that I looked him up. And his name is Ray Iannacelli. And we'll be seeing him in a lot of different roles in SVU in season 3, season 4, and 11. He's also been in quite a few TV shows and movies over the years. So that's Saul. He's messy. His apartment's a fucking mess. So he claims he wasn't home at 8 p.m. on Monday night. And he didn't receive any calls. There weren't any messages. They kind of like push back on this. They're like, are you sure? Blah, 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 blah. And he's like, nope, I was on a date. And they're like, uh-huh. So they don't trust him. Dun-Dun, bullpen again. The squad is wading through a sea of call tips because this is exactly what they thought was going to happen. Lots of psychics are calling them. Kragen enters and yells, you four, off the phones, now. The DNA from Sophie's rape kit matched another rape kit from a victim that was murdered 5 years ago. Bonnie Weathers, 10, from Howard Beach. She was strangled and dumped in an abandoned warehouse. So Finn remarks that this would have been his first victim, probably, because he later switched to water once he got wise, and that's why they even had this DNA from Bonnie. And then Benson opens the file and goes, ah, corn candy.
Guys.
Ugh.
Why?
It's also gross because it means that she was looking at a stomach autopsy.
Yeah.
Corn candy, don't you know? Kragen tells him to go talk to the cops who worked the case. He cleared it with their captain already, and they're in Queens. Dun Dun, a Queens diner where they are mysteriously know the cops are eating. So Stabler is griping about not being... So they're walking up to the diner, by the way. Stabler is griping to Olivia about not being able to get the twins a gift for their birthday, and that Kathy will kill him.
So, like, you know I'm not a Kathy Stabler defender. She is so nice to him this episode, and he spends the whole episode being like, Kathy's gonna beat me over the head.
No, that's what I mean. It's almost like every single time he brings her up, he's being like, oh, I just hope she doesn't beat me today. Now I kind of want her to.
I hope she does.
Benson is clearly sick of hearing about this. It's now like day 12 of this or whatever. And she says, well, you have a good reason. It's the child we have to save. And he retorts, talk to me after you cancel on Michael again. I'm this close to hitting him.
Why does she keep being like, oh, no, Michael, I'll see you the next day? Be like, hey, I've got a 3-day deadline, so at the very least, I'm not going to see you for 3 days.
Right. And like I said earlier, why is Michael calling the work phone? She's working on a missing... I'm assuming he told her. He's like, yeah, I'm working on like a really intense case right now. Like
a girl is probably going to get murdered if I don't figure my shit out.
Right. Exactly. Like, so can you just like chill? Like, Jesus, I'm this close to hitting him. They enter the diner and lo and behold, who do we have here? Do you recognize Tatum?
He looks really familiar. He actually looks like Lloyd's boy. Is he like...
He's... It is! That's Tatum from Lloyd's boy.
Oh my god, he's Lloyd's boy.
That's Tatum from... That's the... Get out of my boy's face.
Stop it.
He's the main boy.
Until you... He looked so familiar, and until you said that, I did not know who that was.
I almost said it to you on my first watch, and then I was like, I'm gonna let her get surprised. She's gonna be so happy to see Tatum from Lloyd's boys. And he has a new partner named Becker, because I'm assuming Lloyd got fired because he and his fucking annoying wife probably kept calling cops on each other and then fucking in front of everybody and like getting into trouble. How did that episode end? None of them went to jail, right?
No one went to jail. She decided to like be with him. And yeah. Cabot had to be like, well, I'm happy because I finally got a marital rape case.
Oh, it's a shit show episode. I'm going to go back and listen to that one. That was a mess. So he's here. He's pissed at them still, obviously. And now he's got Casey Becker, who, she's here for a second. She's played by Kristen Rode, who was Officer Claire Howell in Oz, a truly awful character.
And they're truly awful people because Benson and Stabler are like, hey, we really need this information to catch like a child rapist and it's very important. They're like, is that the sound of the wind blowing?
Yeah, sounds like it's going right over your head. So that's why they're mad. I didn't clock this because earlier Kragen was like, yeah, I cleared it with their captain, so no problem. And I'm like, great, cool. No issues then. I guess Tatum and Becker are angry that Kragen called their boss to ask. I don't know if it's because like it would then make the boss look into the case and maybe he'd be like, how come we never solved this? So yeah, they're giving them like shit for this back and forth. And it was like for 2 seconds. And then Benson takes her fist, slams it on top of Tatum's burger. And I'm like, now you guys know how IAB felt.
That is 100% how they treated IAB.
Yeah, they were like, oh, like the rat squad's here, want some cheese? And like, same shit. They walk into this diner being like, hi. And they're like, oh, sounds like you went over her head. The whole thing is silly. Cop politics are silly.
Dumb.
So she tells him that she's fucking tired. She's tired. They're not getting into a pissing match here over turf. They only have so much time. So they really need them to help. Lloyd's boys kind of get it together in this moment. They give them a few files of suspects that they thought would fit the bill. So I guess they brought the files.
They're like, oh, you fucking go. Yeah, here's the file.
So the two people with bad teeth, because they gave them a couple people that didn't have bad teeth. And then Olivia's like, well, people with like horrendous teeth. And they're like, oh, yeah. So we have Clayton Mills. He lived down the street from Bonnie Weathers, this fifth victim, and Joe Hayes, who was dating Bonnie's babysitter at the time. Dun, dun. Joe Hayes' job site. Joe didn't do it. Moving on.
Moving on. Leaving us with
Clayton Mills. No, literally they go and they're like, hey, Joe. And he's like, I didn't do nothing back then. I didn't do nothing now.
Nothing. And they're like, good enough for us.
So, dun dun, now we go to Dawson's photo studio. It is February 21st. Fancy fist. It's February 21st at 10:27 a.m. Clayton works there part-time, and he was supposed to be working today, but he called out sick. Oh, great.
Weird. Oh.
This is a photo studio, as mentioned. So there's, like, you know, equipment around. They're asking the owner about Clayton, and he's like, yeah, he's not a very good photographer, but he shows interest in it. He helps me out with different things around the studio. So they notice, finally, that this guy is standing in front of a blue sky cloud backdrop. Stabler takes out the photo of Rhonda Simmons, one of the victims, and they hold it up, and they realize it's the same background. So they show Mr. Dawson, the owner of the company, and he says, yep, that was one of ours. And they ask if Clayton accompanied him to school shoots when he does these school pictures. And he says that, yes, he does it to help with equipment. Benson and Stabler show him the address they have for Clayton, and they ask if this is current address or the address that he's aware of. He says, yes, it is. And he mentions that Clayton lives in a room that he rents from an elderly woman named Mrs. Rappaport. So dun dun, they go to Mrs. Rappaport's home. The squad forces their way in and they find party decorations still up in the dining room, living room area. And they see a banner that says Kirsten. So they're looking around. Stabler goes upstairs. They realize no one's in the house, totally abandoned. They see blood on the floor leading to the closet. They open the closet door and they find an elderly woman dead inside with a head wound. So here they just kind of like lose all tact. The men do. Bunch goes, say hello to Mrs. Rappaport. Benson says she must have walked in on him. So she's trying to be helpful. Stabler says Clayton doesn't like surprises.
Yeah, no one really likes being surprised in the middle of their crimes.
Dun dun. Bullpen. Benson and Stabler tell Cragen that last Friday, Mrs. Rappaport went to Atlantic City for what was supposed to be a 4-day trip. Last Friday being the day that Sophie was abducted. She lost all her money and had to come back a day early. According to friends, Mrs. Rappaport makes this trip a few times a year. So per Olivia, Clayton is likely aligning these abductions with when Mrs. Rappaport is gone because it's the only time he has run of the house. Stablin says Kirsten only has 4 hours left to live and Benson cuts him off saying, Elliot, she's already dead. This guy is on the run. Do you really think he's sticking to a schedule? And she looks exhausted.
Which I totally get, but I'm also like, Olivia, you need to work until you find her.
And Stabler says, he goes, and he's looking at her like, are you fucking crazy? He's like, we will proceed with the timeline as if, and then she cuts him off and they go back and forth. It's so funny because as she's going back and forth with him, she's like, her eyes are kind of fluttering and they're like shutting. And he goes, yeah, why don't you go take a nap? And she goes, screw you. And
why is she more tired than everybody else?
Her head is like lolling around. She's like, Elliot, she's already dead. What do you think she's dead? Cragen yells at them to stop. He does that thing where he's not really helping. He's just going like, all right, everyone, fucking stop it.
Everyone's yelling. So Cragen's like, oh,
I'm the only one. Like that. He tells Benson to go get fresh air because she looks like she. When I say to you, this woman looks like she's about to fall on the floor.
Pass out.
Like puddle. So Kathy shows up. And she's there with the twins because now it's their actual birthday. And Stabler pretends not to know how old they are. Quote, unquote, unquote. Oh. How old are you guys now? They're both 8.
As he's like desperately trying to scavenge something from the vending machine to give to them.
Yeah, the vending machine doesn't work. And then he's like, oh, go ask Uncle Munchie if he has any pudding cups. And then they come back and they go, the pudding cup is rotten. Guess I don't have a birthday present for you guys today. And then they go, well, we brought you a present, and they hand him a fresh shirt and a fresh tie, even all wrapped in stuff. So they're giving him things on their birthday. And Elizabeth is the one who gave it to them, or him, and
who?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't even think he thanked her. It's funny the twins are the same age as the girls who were kidnapped and targeted, but he's not like talking about it. But whenever like anyone who is in or around the same age range as Maureen, he won't shut the fuck up.
I have a daughter that age.
Like, right after this, Svensson runs over and tells Elliot to get back over there because they have an update. So Stabler,
like, shoves the gifts they just gave him into their hands and runs away. He's like, bye.
Bye. And then Kathy gives him kind of like an OU.
OU.
My man. So Benson tells Cragen and Stabler that Funch checked back in with Saul, who they discovered owns a pawn shop. And he admitted that Clayton called him back after that initial call, I think. But they were like, that was kind of like the puppy thing. I was like, huh? Either way, he spoke to Clayton, and Saul is now going to meet Clayton at the docks in Red Hook, Brooklyn, so they can do a sale. The docks in Red Hook, Brooklyn. It's February 21st. Happy birthday, Mom! At 3:07 p.m. They're in the back alley, or they're in like a back alley or loading area. It's very like, you know, TV show. So we see snipers positioned on the surrounding rooftops and like kind of in the different abandoned vehicles and like warehouse doors all around. Saul is waiting in his own windowless van that he has, but it's not white, so it's not a rape van. And Munch is sitting in the back. Saul says that Clayton sells some of Mrs. Rappaport's things from time to time on her behalf, and Munch is like, oh, you mean the elderly woman he bludgeoned to death? Which makes Saul really anxious, and I feel like it was, like, a very unhelpful information to give him at that time.
Yeah, no, Munch is, like, goading Saul at the same time he's, like, yelling at him to calm down.
Yes, it's super unhelpful. I wrote that. I was like, he's supposed to be, like, calm. Like, Saul's supposed to be calm because he's supposed to lure Clayton to him so he doesn't run, you know? And then you got fucking Munch sitting down there going, like, you better not fuck this up, by the way. Saul goes, what if he shoots me? And Munch goes, I'll live.
So, of course, it's making this guy more worked up. And Munch is getting, like, madder and madder the more worked up. This is such an Aries thing to do, by the way, to, like, goad as you're getting mad that the person's, like, getting worked up.
Clayton's van pulls in and Saul starts to panic. But, like, silently. He's not, like, screaming and yelling. He's basically just, like too anxious. So when Clayton stops and leans out the window to talk to him, he calls to Saul and he's asking Saul, because he can tell something's off. Saul's being weird.
Because he's got an angry little man screaming at him from the back of his van.
Clayton yells, hey, Saul, come over here. And Saul, I think he either looks at one of the snipers or down at Munch, and Clayton realizes that, like, something's up here, and he starts to fucking peel out, because he never gets out of the van. He just, like, leaves it running, and he starts to try to leave the way he came. So right then, everyone's freaking out. They all go into action. Some of the other cars that were waiting block off the entrance. He doubles back, tries to ram through to the other entrance. They make him swerve left, and he goes into an alley, or, like, another alley parts, like a dead end. So then they yank him out of the van. Finn, like, slams this guy, like, rams him into the side of the van. I wonder if the actor was kind of like, man, okay, sorry.
Oh, geez.
Like, Jesus, it was great acting. So Clayton honestly looks like he's about to pass out, but not from being scared. He's just really unhealthy. They went to town on his teeth, because the profile, it almost looked orange. You can see them from, like, we're not, like, super close up to his face, and you could see the teeth.
So can I say, Clayton Mills is played by Jonathan Freed, who we have seen before.
I was just about to say that. Go ahead.
He was the angry dad from Uncivilized, the one who was like, I let my son in his house. And we made fun of him.
We did. We made fun of
him. We have actually made fun of this person before. And his teeth are normal. I went back and watched the clip today. His teeth are perfectly normal, straight and white.
Oh, yeah. No, these were clearly, they look like bones. Like, we got a shot him up close later. It looks like they took bones, like skeleton teeth. I was like, Jesus Christ. I had recognized Clayton. Actually, I knew. I was like, nah, we've seen him before, but I forget where. And so I clicked on it, and my favorite part was his IMDb photo is from
is Uncivilized
first episode. Yeah. It's just him from that episode. He also plays a internet rapist, I think, in season 16. Stabler opens the back of the van and crawls over, like, 10 garbage bags all in there. So inexplicably. So they move. He moves him around. He finds Kirsten. So at first she doesn't move, but then she begins to stir. She's still in the princess costume. Ugh, I'm sick. Stabler is carrying her out of the van, and he's holding her, and we get another shot of Clayton, like, staring at Kirsten as he carries her past, and again, Finn, like, I'm exaggerating, but he basically, like, slams his fist on this guy's head and, like, shoves him in the car. Dun, dun, now we're at Rikers Island. It's February 22nd, but we don't need to know what time it is anymore. The countdown's over.
Done.
Cabot is in there with Clayton and his attorney. So they want Cabot to discuss a deal with them. And Cabot's in a very classic Cabot pose. She's got her arms and leg crossed. And she's like, your client rapes and murders children. The only deal he's getting is a free last meal. They give her the best lines. The lawyer says that Clayton disclosed to him that he had murdered a girl and disposed of her body. Cabot, who I believe is assuming that he means Bonnie Weathers, the girl found in the warehouse, says that they already know about the four victims that he disposed of. So then they close up on Clayton, who says that there are five victims. He says that his very first victim was never found, but he'd be willing to tell them where she is if they take the death penalty off the table. Cabot says no again, and she's like, we have four victims. It's going to put a needle in your arm. We don't need a fifth. And Clayton taunts her and insists that the girl's mother may want the closure. So he's really creepy. He does a good job here, especially as somebody who once played a father. But he does say his first victim, he says that she was a perfect little princess and like, ugh, sweet as can be.
Gross.
And I was fucking, I remember being horrified when I heard it when I was a kid and I saw this because I was just like, it was, again, it was the first time I was confronted with, like, I knew about, why Stranger Danger was so bad, but it was the first time you're being confronted with, like, a predator speaking that way about a child.
Yeah.
And it's very disturbing because you're like, but that's a kid. Dun dun, ADA Phillips office. Cabot is trying to convince Phillips that we need to take the death penalty off the table in order to find the fifth victim and give her family closure. He's almost laughing at this idea because of how crazy it sounds. He's like, Cabot, he's like, I cannot do this to the public. He goes, the public wants him dead. The city wants him dead. Even protesters of the death penalty want this guy dead. He notes that he has to consider the other victims' families because it would just be kind of mean to take that away from them. So then Cabot brings in Mrs. Douglas, who, you know, at one time basically didn't give a fuck about anyone else's kids. She's like, fuck them kids, all but my own. She's now here, and she's pleading with Phillips to accept the deal so that the fifth victim's mother can have closure. And she says that it almost killed her not knowing where Sophie was for 3 days, and she can't imagine just never knowing.
Redemption for her, because now I like her.
I said they can never make me like you, Mrs. Douglas. So he agrees. Dun dun, we're in a wooded area. So this is one of the creepiest scenes, I think, in my memory of SVU. It's worth watching yourself because I will never do it justice with, like, my breathy descriptions of
it. It's a really good scene.
We see Benson and Stabler, and they're watching. It's snowing out there, or it has snowed. A team is digging up a spot in this wooded area. Clayton is also looking on. He's being held by guards on either side of him. The people digging pull out a child's red shoe, and they hold it up. So now we cut to Benson Stabler, and they're standing outside of a house, and they're looking at it as if it's sort of haunted, very stoically. They walk up to the door, and they knock, and a woman answers. Stabler says, Mrs. Lear? And she says, yes. Executive producer Dick Wolf. Great episode.
Very, very good episode.
We giggled and guffawed our way through it, but it was a good
mostly to get through it. Gee, I mean, it's not heavy, but it's good. It's fast-paced. I don't know. It's one of the better episodes we've seen thus far.
Next week, I apologize if this is airing later than a Tuesday. It would only be because I had to do jury duty for the great state of New York for Alexandra Cabot. Hopefully, we'll definitely see you next week, regardless. And I think we might end up taking a break Thanksgiving week. We discussed.
We'll see.
So yeah. We'll see.
Maybe we'll do like another Elite Tea. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about our Elite Tea. Everyone, please go listen to Elite Tea if you didn't. It's only 33 minutes, I think.
It's really
I also
short.
Love. Yeah, it was really quick. I loved that. Everybody, have a happy November. You are going to be hearing from us again, but just have a happy November. I just want you to have a happy November.
Just be happy. Enjoy November. Next time, I will be recapping season 2, episode 16, Runaway, with Monique Jeffrey's final appearance. I'm 99.9% sure.
99.9% sure. But this, we reserve the right to say only wrong things on a podcast that...
It's our podcast.
It's free. And it's ours. Oh, did we ever thank our Australian followers?
No. Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
Sydney and Perth. Unless you're robots. Actually, thank you especially if you're robots.
Yeah. So thank you if you're real listeners. I saw that we actually now have 8 Sydney listeners as of this week. So hooray. Hello, all 8 of you. Thanks for... I don't know
good
how
day.
You found us. Good day.
Oh yeah, my God. Good day. Cut that out. They're going to be like, shut. They're like, they just turn it off. They're like, wow.
Thank you so much for listening to us. I don't know how you found us. Thank you. If you're bots, still thank
also,
you.
Thank you. Well, guys. Well.
Well. Well, guys. Well.
Well.
Well. Bye.
Bye.